to great core personalities, there's really be a much be on your life.
Speak a little bit about the chalas. In the Chumash we have a mitzvah of tzitzis, that if someone is wearing a four-corner garment, he's obligated to put tzitzis on the corners. Then the Torah says he has to put some strings of chalas into the tzitzis. The Gemara has a machlekes hatanoim, whether the chalas is me'akevus as halovan or not. What if you don't have any chalas, you only have lovan? Are you yotze the mitzvah in an incomplete fashion, or do you say you're not yotze the mitzvah at all? Sometimes there are mitzvahs that, let's say, you have a lulav and an eser, hadasim and aroz. If you're missing one of the four, so there's no partial credit, then ma'akvim zeh. But another mitzvah, let's say you have a korban chatas, he's supposed to be zorek the dam on four karnas on his be'ach. So we pass like the Beis Hillel. That if he did one zrika, did he ever do yotze? The mitzvah b'shleimus is to do four zrikas. If he did one zrika, did he ever? It's good. He's supposed to do chalitza. When a man dies, a married person dies, leaving no descendants, leaving no children, no grandchildren, no descendants. So his wife is only permitted to remarry if she has chalitza from her brother-in-law, from the husband's brother. And the mitzvah b'shlei Musa is to do chalitza rikikin kriyas apsukim. And b'di'evit we paskin that the kriyas apsukim is not mi'akev and the rikika is not mi'akev. The only thing that's mi'akev is the chalitza. So why do you need the kriyas apsukim? Why do you need the rikika in the first place? It's a mitzvah b'shlei Musa. So yeah, there's a machlokes hataraim. You have these kind of mitzvahs and those kind of mitzvahs. Sometimes the parts of the mitzvah ma'akim zezeh. Sometimes not me'akim zezeh. So it's machlokes hatanoim, but the tchelus me'akevus l'salova. And the majority opinion was, like the chachamim of Rebbe, that tchelus eni me'akevus l'salova, malova eni me'akevus l'tchelus. If you have only tchelus strings, or only lovan strings, so we paskin b'di'evit yu yoytze. Abin Ezrachi Alevi, the Balamor, and Perek Babin Madlikin, paskins like Rebbe. That tchelus is me'akevus l'salova. But that was not the generally accepted opinion. It was generally accepted that not me'akim zezeh. In the days of the Vilna Gaon had no official capacity in Vilna. He was a Talmid Chacham, a Satan, like he was not the rabbi, he was not the Dayan. So the Dayan in Vilna at that time, in times of the Vilna Gaon, wrote a Sefer HaChumash that's known as Revid HaZov, the Torah Tmima. Writes that he used the Revid HaZov. Many claim that he used it so much that he plagiarized. That much of the Sefer is just straight. He lifted lock, stock, and barrel from the Revid HaZov. Even there's a misprint in the Revid HaZov. He'll write Simon Tav Gimel instead of Tav Nun. He has everything from the Revid HaZov. Whatever. Okay. So that's a dispute. I know a girl whose doctoral dissertation was to prove that he didn't plagiarize the Revid HaZov. How can you say that? That's hard. Whatever. So this Revid HaZov is a Sefer HaChumash by this Dayan from Vilna during the time of the Vilna Gaon. And he has all the Marikonis. He tells you to look in the Gemara, look in the Yerushalmi, look in the Tosfos, look in the Tosefta, look in the Shulchan Aruch, and he always quotes what it says over here. And then once in a while he has an original comment. So he writes a remez, maybe from the Pasuk, that we should paskin like the Chachamim of Rebbe, that Tchelus Eini Me'akevus HaSalavim, because the Pasuk says, and us know how to say, you should put on tzitzis l'dorei son, say for all the future generations. So we live. If you live in a generation where there's no tchelus, how can you be yotze the mitzvah of tzitzis? So from the fact that the pasuk says l'dorei son, sounds like the mitzvah applies even in all generations. The Gemara has such a comment about geirus. The Gemara says that a geir, a non-Jew who converts, has to bring a korban oilo to the Beis HaMikdash. But even if you live Bizman Chain Beis HaMikdash Kayim and you don't have the opportunity to bring the Korban Oila, the Geris is still Chal B'di'evit. How do you know? Because it says, V'chayog Yotchen Ger L'dor HaSechem. If a Ger will join the Jewish people throughout all the future generations, seemingly including even a generation when there's no Beis HaMikdash. Just like the Gemara has such a comment on Geris Bizman Chain Beis HaMikdash Kayim. So the Dayan from Vilna wrote, I think his name is Rabbi Socha Ber, I forgot. This in the Revid HaZov, so he writes such a similar drasha over here. We should say that Dorasam, Dorasechem, by tzitzis means it applies in all the generations. Not exactly the same, because the Chumash itself speaks about the possibility of Vashimosi as Migdashechem. So the Chumash says, Chayog Yitachem Ger, the Dorasechem in all generations, Even in the generation that we're talking about in the Chumash, Hashimosi has been the Shechem. The Chumash never speaks about a generation where there's not going to be any Tchelos. So maybe when it says of Dora same, the Dora, maybe it doesn't teach me that it even applies in a generation when there's no Tchelos. But that's the Psak anyway. But the majority opinion was that Tchelos is not Miakip. So for so many centuries, somehow we didn't have Tchelos. And the people were wearing tzitzis anyway. The Rabbi Mizrahi Levi didn't wear tzitzis. He thought the din is like Rebbe. A tchelis is makavis is alovan. So the Ramban writes, he heard, the Rabbi Mizrahi Levi, the author of the Sefer Hamor. He came from the city Lunel. Lunel means the moon. So he named his Sefer Hamor HaKotten, Al Shem Iro. And then when he comes to Noshim and Ezekiel, he says, the light of the moon is not sufficient to learn Noshim and Ezekiel. You got to have sunlight. You got to have much more light for that. So he calls the Sefer Hamor HaGolom. So up until Ezekiel is the Mor HaKotten, because he came from Lunel, and then he calls it the Mor HaGolom. It's printed on the bottom of the riff. So the Ramban says that we heard the Balamon never what sits is because he holds that Tchelus is Me'akeves, but we don't pass on that. We pass on for many generations. We were wearing tzitzis without tchelos, and in our generation, they think they found the chalozon. What's the chalozon? The Gemara says, and the Rambam quotes it, that you can only be yotze tchelos if the string is a specific material, has to be made from wool, and it has to be a specific color blue, color of the sky. Question: color of the sky, different times of the day. Rashi claims, Rashi and Chumash writes, the color of the sky at midnight. Color of the sky midnight is black, it's dark. Rashi says that tchelos miloshen tichlo, death. Makas b'choros occurred at Chatzos. So Rashi claims that the color of the tchelos is supposed to be dark blue, color of the sky at midnight. The Rambam holds that it's supposed to be the color of the sky in the afternoon, light blue. So it's a big difference. Rav Soloveitchik once gave a drosha. He used to give a major drosha on his father's yahrzeit. That was Gimel Shvat. Every year, Gimel Shvat, I think, never falls out on a Shabbos, if I'm not mistaken. So every year he gave a drosha on Gimel Shvat. And he had hundreds of people come from all over. People would fly into New York by plane in order to hear the shir. The shir would be 4 hours, a minimum. The first 2 hours would be a shir in halacha. Then the next 2 hours would be a shir in hashkofa, based on the halacha. He would explain machshava, hashkofa, satora, based on the halach. So, one year the shiur was dedicated to, he spoke about tchelos. So he was speaking about this machlokes. Rashi and the Rambam has roots in Kabbalah, where the tchelos is supposed to represent midas hagvura or midas hadin. According to Rashi, that is the color of the sky at midnight to represent Makas Becheres. So that's Midas Adin, Midas Agvurim. And according to the Rambam, that is the color of the sky in the afternoon when the sun is shining. So that's like Midas Achesed. The sun is shining and it's warm and it's light. So there seems to be such a discussion in Zohar, in Kabbalah sources, whether the Tchel is supposed to be Midas Achesed or Midas Agvurim. But Akal Panim, the Gemara says, and the Rambam quotes the din, that the tchelos has to be a specific material, the string has to be wool, and it has to be a specific color blue, and the source of the blue has to be from a marine animal, from a certain animal that appears in the Mediterranean Sea, that's called the chalozon. And the Gemara says that in the days of the Tanaim, there were merchants who were selling imitation tchelos that was known as kloilon, and they were fooling the public into believing that this was tchelos. And the Orach is a dictionary written by one of the Rishonim who lived in Rome, Rabbi Nassen, and he gives you all the Talmudic translations, well, the Talmudic words. So he says that kloilon is the imitation dye that they used to use to fool the people, because tchelos was very expensive if you get it from a chalazim. And the kloilon is easier to get. That came from a vegetable. So the Orach writes that kloilon is indigo. Indigo, we know what color it is. It's blue. If you want, you can make it dark blue. If you want, you can make it light blue. You can make it either the color of the sky now, the color of the sky in the daytime, depending how much you're going to dilute the blue. So the tchelos has to be that color blue, indigo, that color blue. Some had a whole chiddush. Tchelos is purple, but that's not the color of the sky, and that's not what indigo. Indigo, we know what indigo is. Indigo is blue. So tchelos is supposed to be able to be exchanged with indigo. You're not supposed to confuse it, but the fakers, the crooks in the days of the Tanaim, used to sell indigo and claim to the people that it was tchelos. So the din is that it's only kosher for tchelos if it's this material. It has to be wool. It has to be a certain color of blue. We're not sure, dark, dark blue, light blue, and it has to come from the chalosan. If it comes from the vegetable, the indigo comes from a vegetable, that's not acceptable. So many years ago, somehow in the days of the Gaonim, after the days of the Gemara, the Tanoim and Amoroim, after the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash, everybody was still wearing tchelos. And somehow in the days of the Gaonim, before the days of Rashi and Taisis, before the days of Rishonim, the tchelos disappeared. So there was a Chassidish Rebbe in the late 1800s, the Radzina Rebbe. He was the one who put out the... He composed the Talmud Bavli on Mishnayis Taharis. He took all the Gemaras all over Shas, and he put them in the order that they're commenting on Mishnayis and Taharis. So he made his own Talmud Bavli. He didn't make up Gemaras. He took Gemaras that exist, and he rearranged them in the order of Mishnayis and Taharis, and he wrote his commentary on the side. So many rabbanim had a taina. He's misrepresenting the Gemara. He didn't make anything up. He just took pages from the Gemara and put them in. So when he printed the second edition, so he insisted he should put on top of every page Seder Taharis, because otherwise it looked like a Gemara Rashi and Tesis. It looked just like a Gemara Rashi and Tesis. So he put on top. He printed on top. This is not a Gemara. This is Seder Taharis. Okay. So he was a big goyim. This Radzina Rebbe was a big Gemara. Gershon Henoch Liner. His name was. And he was a Chassidish Rebbe, he was a holy tzaddik. He was hoping and praying the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt during his lifetime, but that the Beis HaMikdash should be rebuilt, we should be able to bring karbonis. You have to have Kohan wearing big day kahuna to be makriv the karbonis. And part of the big day kahuna would sometimes require tchelos. So we usually assume, it's not 100% necessarily so, we usually assume that just like the tchelos for the tzitzis has to come from this chalazon, so to the tchelos for the big dikuna has to come from chalazon. Some say that the Rambam doesn't seem to say like that. Some say that the Rambam seems to imply that the tchelos for the big dikuna does not have to come from chalazon. But it's usually assumed like that. So this Rav Gershon Henoch, this Rabbeinu Rebbe, was challenging to hasten the building of the Beis HaMikdash. He thought we have to prepare. He specially traveled to Italy. He heard that there was an aquarium in Italy. Went to Italy to see what are the candidates, which marine animal could it possibly be that they get to die from. So after studying all the different animals there, he came to the conclusion that it's a certain fish. He came to the conclusion that it's a certain fish that spits out a black dye. What do we call our fish?
Cuttlefish.
Cuttlefish, what do we usually call it though?
Squid.
The squid fish, that it spits out black stuff. It spits out black stuff, yeah. So he decided that's it. So then he took some wool, and he tried to dye it with the black stuff from the squid fish. And then after it dried out, then he tried to wash it out, and all the dye came out. And he kept on trying time and time and time again, the dye kept on coming out. And the Gemara says that the way you can tell that it's really tchelos is if it's indelible, if it can't wash out. So there's a problem over here. He kept on washing out. So he put an advertisement in the Italian newspaper. He needs the assistance of a chemist. He's prepared to pay money. He needs someone to help him in dyeing wool. So a non-Jew volunteered for money. Why not? So the guy came and the Rebbe explained what he has. He has wool and he has the dye and it keeps on washing out. He wants that it shouldn't wash out. So the chemist said, no problem. So the next day he came, he gave him a chemical. And he said, you mix in this chemical, it's not going to wash out. Lo and behold, it worked. So the Rebbe went back to Radzin and he built a factory and they were manufacturing tchelos from the squid fish, from the cuttlefish, and there were tens of thousands of chassidim and many misnagdim also. Many tzaddikim in Europe, not chassidim, who are wearing tchelos of the Radzina Rebbe. Many years go by, and Rabbi Herzog was a young, single man. He had a rabbanus in Ireland, and he went to university. And for his doctoral dissertation, he decided to write about Tchelos. So he started collecting as much material as he could. So this was before the Second World War. So he corresponded with the Jew who was in charge of the factory, Radzin. So he heard all the information for him. So he took the Radzina tzitzis of Tchelos, and he was testing it chemically. And he says he came to the conclusion that the Goyish chemist fooled the Chassidish Rebbe, that he gave him a dye that's Prussian blue. The chemical that the Goy gave the Rebbe, that's what gave the color. And there was nothing there menachah, there was nothing there from an animal source at all. All the dye from the squid fish was washed out, and the dye from the chemical, that's what made it Prussian blue. So he... So Rabbi Herzog thought that the Radzina Rebbe made a mistake, and he delved into it on his own. He came to the realization that the word chalazon means what he called a malas. It's a shellfish. It's a shelled animal. It's not like a squid fish, not a big fish. It's not a dog. Rashi always says the chalazon is a dog. A dog means a fish, or a dog means a marine animal. So Rabbi Herzog said it means obviously a marine animal, because in all the Midrashim and all the Gemaras, the word chalazon is a technical term that means an animal that lives in the sea that has a shell around it. So it has to be a shelled animal. Then you look around in history, you look around in museums, and they tell you what were the sources that they had in antiquity in the days of the Tanaim, before and after, that they would get blue dye from some marine shelled animal from the Mediterranean. So the only thing is this Murus trunculus, whatever it is, that shelled animal. So he came to the conclusion that that's it. After the Second World War, the Nazis destroyed the whole factory in Radzin, where they were manufacturing all the Tchelos. So the Radzin Hasidim, those who survived, came to Eretz Yisrael. They wanted to rebuild the factory. So the only one who knew the whole secret, the recipe of how to make the Tchelos, was Rav Herzog, who had corresponded with the man who was in charge of the factory. So they corresponded with Rav Herzog, and he told them this is what they did in the factory, but it's all wrong, because he tested it out, and it turns out that it's only Prussian blue. It's from the chemical. There's nothing left in the squid fish. So they accepted what Rav Herzog said, what he said, the way they manufactured the trellis in the factory, but they didn't accept what he said, that the whole thing was wrong. So they have a factory here in Eretz Yisrael. They still continue to manufacture trellis the way the guy fooled the Rebbe in the late 1800s, and they used the Prussian blue. And then another group here in Eretz Yisrael started recently, about 20 years ago, I don't know, and they went scuba diving for this shellfish. And then they came to the realization that you can buy it in Greece and Italy and different places on the coast of the Mediterranean in Europe. And now they have this, they have trails. How many strings are you supposed to have of Tchelos? It's very unclear. So the Rambam, there was a Machloikas, Bisham and Bisil, how many strings are you supposed to have in the whole tzitzis? That's one of the cases where we pass them like Bishamai. We don't pass them like Bisil. The Gemara says there are 24 cases where we pass them like Bisham. So this is, there are 18 cases in the Mishnah in the end of the first parak in Masechus Shabbos. The Yutches Gzeres, one day Bishamai outvoted Bisil, and they rammed through 18 Gzeres, the Rabbanan, in one day. And then, over the course of time, there were another additional 6 cases where we pass them like Beishamai. So one of them is the number of the strings in the tzitzit. So we have 4 long strings that you fold over to turn out to make 8 strings. So the Rambam's opinion is that the half of one of the strings is supposed to be trelis. One out of the 8 strings is supposed to be trelis. It says in the Chumash, 1 string, so 1 string is 1 out of 8. The Rabbi disagrees with the Rambam. He says, no, it's 1 out of 4. A whole long string is supposed to be trelis. Make a half a string chelis is very hard, because when they dye it blue, they don't first, the strings are all twined. So they don't take a twined string and then dip it in the dye. If you're going to dip it in after you twined it, only the outside will be blue and the inside is going to be white. So you have to dye it when it's still wool. So you have to then you have to make one long string using some wool that's dyed blue and other wool that's not dyed blue. So that's quite a trick. Thank you. So it's a complicated trick. You're going to the Rambam to dye wool and then to make one long string. Half of the string should be made from the wool that was dyed blue. Half of the string should be made white. So it's never going to be exactly half and half. According to the Rambam, it's a difficult trick. According to the Rambam, you make one out of the long four strings, you make blue. Rashi and Tosfos don't agree with the Rambam or the Rambam. They understood that you make two long strings of blue and two long strings of white. When you study the Shulchan Aruch, already in the days of the Shulchan Aruch, they didn't have any tchelis. Tchelis was lost in the days of the Gaonim. But the Shulchan Aruch has several other halachas that are based on the assumption, like Rashi and Tosfos, that there are two blue strings and two white strings. It's half and half. We have several halachas like that. Take, for example, the Mishneh Berurah quotes a psak from the Malbim. The Malbim wrote a sefer on the beginning. He planned to write a sefer on all of Shulchan Aruch, but he only got to the middle of Hilchas Tefillin, and then it conked out. So he writes in his sefer, and the Mishneh Berurah quotes it, la'alacha, that you can have, let's say if I have a silk talus, so you can have two strings on the in the corner can be silk, and two strings can be blue, but you shouldn't have three in one, because there are two units in the corner. They have two strings that are lavan and two strings that are tchelis. And even today, even in the days of the Malbim, the days of the Mishneh Berurah, they didn't have any tchelis. Two strings are representing the tchelis. So you can't have three in one. You have to have, if you don't have enough silk, if you don't have enough wool, you should have two strings wool and two strings should be silk. So they, and then several other halachas like that, all working on the assumption that the din is like Rashi and Avinatan. So that's why many today think that if we think we found the correct tchelis, so we should follow Rashi and Tosfos that it should be two and two. That's what the Shulchan Aruch has been paskening for so many centuries. The Gemara says that since the Tchelis is Doma L'Rakia, and we have a tradition that there are seven heavens, it's not just an English expression, on the seventh heaven, it's based on a discussion in the Gemara, in the second parak in Chagiga, the Gemara demonstrates from Sukkim and Tanakh that there are seven heavens. So since, if you have Tchelis, and Tchelis is Doma L'Rakia, there are seven heavens, and in order that there be seven heavens, you have to have six avirim, maps that can be cleaned. If you have no avirim between the first heaven and the second heaven, then it's all one big heaven. So if you have seven heavens and six avirim, seven and six is 13. So the Gemara says, when you have tchelis, you want it to be done with the rakia, so you should have a minimum of seven and a maximum of 13. So that's a big machlekes, and this is a minimum of seven and a maximum of 13 watts. Minimum of seven, where? Seven or 13. So for many centuries, the practice was we had four units. You made a double knot, then you round around, then another double knot, and round around, so we made 7, 8, 11, 13. Where did the lucky numbers come from? A minimum of 7, maximum of 13. So that's one pshat in Tosfos. How many krichas should you make in each chulia? A chulia is how many times do you wrap around in between two double knots. So the minimum of 7, maximum of 13. The other opinion in Tosfos is no. The Gemara seems to say three krichas in one chulia. Not 7, not 13. So what's the minimum of 7? Minimum of 7 chulias. For so many centuries, we only made 4 chulias because we didn't have chelas. So the 7, 13, the rakia is irrelevant. All idea of 7 and 13 is when you have chelas, it's done with the rakia. But now that you really have, if you think that you may have the correct chelas, so you should really have a minimum of 7 chulias and a maximum of 13 chulias. So if one wants to satisfy both opinions, is going to use up an awful lot of wool, a lot of string, you have to have a minimum of 7 chulias, and each chulia should have a minimum of 7 krichas in it. So that's an awful lot of string. So years ago, the Tchelis company in Eretz Yisrael didn't make such long strings. They just wouldn't be able to do that. But now, they make the, if you, upon request, you can get, for the same price, you can get longer strings of blue. So if you want to satisfy the both opinions and tests, you want to have 7 chulias, and each chulia having 7 krichas, so you can do that. So you'll have 7 times 7 is 49 krichas. And then our practice for so many centuries was, we followed the minhag of the Chachmei Ashkenaz, that you make a double knot all the time, you make double knots. So if you want to have 7 units, you have to have 8 double knots, one at the beginning and one at the end of each one of the chulias. So that every time you make a double knot, it uses up an awful lot of wool, an awful lot of string. So you got to have very long strings to make all these 8 double knots and the 7 krichas in each one of the 7 chulias. Then the question is, what do you wrap around? Do you wrap around the white? Do you wrap around the blue? What are you supposed to be winding around what? So here there are different opinions, and here there's no way to satisfy all the opinions, but the mazal is that this is not Miyake B'di Eved. So the Rambam has one opinion, and Tosfos has a few opinions, and the Gaonim have different suggestions, and the Ravid has a different suggestion. Everyone has a different suggestion. It's hard to determine. There's not enough source material in the Gemara to see what was the earliest practice. So many people have the lazy man's minig. That's what I do. When I use the Tchelis, I take the easiest sheet, the easiest one to satisfy the Rambam. The Rambam says that if you do 7 units of 7 each, so the Rambam says the first wrap around the first time should be white, the very last one, the first one and the 49th should be white, and all the other 47 kriches that you do should all be blue. The kriches should be really, that's what it means, psil tchelis, psil does mean a string, psil means winding around. Naftuli alakim, we just had yesterday, etc. Naftuli alakim niftalti im achosi means that I was wrestling with my sister. So, naftuli means psil. Rashi and Chumash writes that the word dorikesh upsalto, if you remember in Azinu, dorikesh upsalto, so Rashi translates salto, tzedreit, it's a German word, tzedreit, all wound around, all screwy. So when it says psil trelis, it doesn't mean a string of trelis, it means you should have trelis wrapped around the other string. So the Rambam understood that to mean that the ikar winding around, let's say if you have 49 times wound around, so 47 out of 49 should be winding around, the trelis should be tzedreit, should be wound around the lovon, and the first wrap around and the last wrap around should be lovon. That's how the Rambam learns. But that's not Miyake B'diyev. That's not Miyake B'diyev. So we're not sure. We're not sure if this Burex trunculus is really the chaloza or not. It's at least 50-50 Suffolk. Most probably it's much more than 50-50 Suffolk if they've discovered that in the days of the Tanaim, this is the only source for marine life in the Mediterranean that they ever had to make blue dye. So this is the only one. So of course it's Tchelis. Then they found evidence from non-Jewish sources that the non-Jews used to refer to this, exactly this dye, as Tchelis. So it seems that it's way more than a 50-50 Suffolk. It's probably 99% certain that this is really the Tchelis. When the Radzina Rebbe came up with his Chiddush, he thought that he discovered the Chalozin. He thought that we should put on the Tchelis. So many Rabbanim went along with it, and many were opposed. So one of the Rabbanim who was opposed was the Brisker Rav, the father of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, the one who wrote the Beis Halevi, Rav Yoshe Beis Soloveitchik. So we don't have a letter that he sent. We have the Radzina Rebbe printed 3 different svarim on the topic of Tchelis. Now they print all 3 small svarim. Now they print all 3 together on one volume. That's called Shloshe Sifriyat Tchelis. So the second volume, he has letters, correspondence from other Rabbanim who agreed and disagreed with him. So he has there a letter. He doesn't tell you who the author is. He just writes, the letter was sent to him by a close associate, a Tachachm, who was friendly with Rabbi Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik, the Beis Halevi, the author of the Beis Halevi, the rabbi from Brisk. So this, and he prints the letter. So the letter says, if you would have come up with a different suggestion of a different marine animal from the Mediterranean as candidate for the chalazon, I would be happy to go along with you. But you tell me that it's the squid fish. Our forefathers know about the squid fish. They all know that it spits out, goes up. When I was a little boy, I heard the squid fish spits out this black dye, dark, dark black dye. So my grandfather knew about that, and he never used it for trailers. So it's as if we have a masorah that you're wrong. We have a tradition that you're wrong. So how can we use the squid fish? That's out of the running. If you come up with a different fish, I would consider it. That's the version that appears in the Sefer of the second volume of the Radzina Rebbe, that he claims a close associate of the Beis Halevi sent him the letter in the name of the Beis Halevi. The Soloveitchik family, both the family in America as well as the family here in Eretz Yisrael, they have a different version of what their great-grandfather said. They claim that the Beis Halevi said, we don't have a tradition, we don't have a masorah on the chalozin. And even if you can figure out, based on archaeology and based on dictionaries, and you have all kind of evidence that this animal, this is the chalozin, and this stuff is called chalas by the goyim, since we lost our tradition, ish mit biish, so even if you're right, you're not right. You always have to have a tradition. Take for example, they have the same bug in their head about rice. The Gemara says that there's a machlekes hatanaim. What bracha you say whether rice is from the chameshes mini doga? Machlekes abiechem menui in the chachamim. So we paskin that it's not from the chameshes mini doga. Horiz v'dochen is not from the chameshes mini doga. Nonetheless, the Gemara says if you eat orez, then you say bari minim zaynes, and at the end you say bari nefashes. So what exactly is, so Tosfos says only orez. If you eat doichen, you say bari pri hadama. It's not bari minim zaynes. So what exactly is orez? So the machlokes and Tosfos, whether orez is rice or doichen is rice. One of them is rice and one of them is millet. So the one of them that's orez is supposed to be bari minim zaynes and bari nefashes. So everybody knows, you ask any Puerto Rican on the street in Washington Heights, they tell you, arroz. Arroz is rice. You ask an Arab. The Arabs call rice arroz, oriz. So everybody knows that Torah. So the Briska have this hang up. No, since we lost the tradition, which one is rice? So it's a suffix and everything. You can't follow the dictionaries. You can't ask the local Puerto Rican. You can't ask the local Arab. You can't rely on their say. Even if it's right that oriz is the rice, it's not right, because we have to have a tradition on everything. So they asked Rabbi Yashiv, what does he say? He said he thinks that doesn't make any sense. If you can reconstruct something based on archaeology, based on dictionaries, so matov, so you know that orez is rice. If you figure out that this is tailors, if this is chalazin, so be it. Who says you have to have a masora and identify what the chalazin is? He thought that it made more sense. The version that was printed in the Radzina Rebbe Sefer made more sense. That the argument of the Briska Rav was, how can you tell me that it's the squid fish? Our parents and our grandparents were familiar with the squid fish, that it spits out black dye, and they didn't use it for the trail. So if we have a tradition that you're wrong, that it can't be the squid fish. But he thought that it didn't make sense, this new Taina of the Soloveitchik family, the name of the Beis Halevi, that since you don't have a tradition, so even if you're right, it's not going to be correct. So that's why many people will use the new tchelis. You have everything to gain and nothing to lose. The Gemara says, what happens if you buy a pair of tzitzis and you fell in? A faker dyed the strings with kloilon, with indigo, which is exactly the same color as the tchelis, but it's not kosher for the tchelos. So what's the din? So the Gemara says, lo hei ala lavan. So you're not yotze tchelos. So he cheated you, he stole $100 of your money, but you're still yotze, the tzitzis is still kosher. It doesn't make it possible. Just because, so you're not yotze in the mitzvah of tchelos, but you're still yotze in the mitzvah of lavan. So yeah, you have everything to gain and nothing to lose. It could well be, and it probably is, that this stuff is the chalos and this is the tchelos, so it's the correct fulfillment of the mitzvah. And even if not, so the Gemara says, lo yehei ala lavan, it doesn't possible with tzitzis. That's why many people in this generation are all excited to wear the tzitzis with the tchelos. Some people raised an issue. I was told you were learning the Gemara about mechziki yuhara. Is it an issue of mechziki yuhara? Remember once there was a student in the yeshiva, I think he was a ger. His father, I think, was something in the American Army. And he was a ger. He was very frum, very frum. He was married, lived in Washington Heights. And he used to put on his tallis and tefillin at home and walk to shul. He used to daven the aguda, near me. He used to walk to shul, because that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. You have to put on tallis and tefillin at home, and then you walk to shul in the street. So the Rabbi Yosef Akari writes this in the city Tzfas, where they don't have dog's mess in the middle of the sea, in the middle of the city. They have all the tzaddikim, the kubalim, walking in the streets there. It's clean streets, full of Torah. Washington Heights, you have filthy streets. You have goyim walking in the streets. The overwhelming majority of the population, non-Jewish, looks a little ridiculous. The guy walks with his talis and tefillin in the street. So the rabbi in the shul told him he doesn't think it's right. The mechzik ki yuhara. So the guy didn't listen. So the rabbi told him, why don't you ask your Rosh Yeshiva? Ask him. So he learned in the Kollel at that time. So he asked me, what do I think? So I told him over a joke, but he didn't get the joke. I told him over a joke that they say that the Talmud came to the Rebbe to ask about a certain Chumrah, but it's Metzi Ki Yuhara. So the Rebbe said, I don't think so. I think it's Yuhara Mamash. I told him the joke. He didn't get the joke. So he just continued to put on the talis and tell him, I'm going to walk the shul. The question is this mechzik yuhara? What kind of mechzik yuhara? It says in the Chumash, you got to wear chelos. Mechzi kiyuara, the Gemara says, if you have a practice that's reserved for Talmidei Chachamim, and I want to volunteer, it's clear I'm not a Talmid Chacham, I want to volunteer to observe a practice. Fasting on certain days, or not doing malach on certain fast days, there are certain times of tzaddikim, certain days in the course of the year that unusual tzaddikim fast, or something like that. Normal people don't do this, only unusual tzaddikim. So that's a discussion in the Tanaim. When is it permissible? Is it permissible under what circumstances is it permissible for a plain person who's not on that madrega to observe this chumra? When a person is not on that level and he observes a chumra, it looks a little ridiculous. The Gemara in Soita has a mashal that if a woman is dressed beautifully, and then she puts on jewelry, so it even enhances her beauty. She even looks better than before. What if the woman is wearing pajamas and then she's wearing jewelry? It's going to look more ridiculous. If she wouldn't put on the jewelry, it wouldn't look so bad. She puts on jewelry with pajamas, it looks ridiculous. Here, if you have a person who's a tzaddik and he observes all the mitzvahs and he doesn't talk lashon hara and he learns Torah all day long, and then he has a certain midas chasidus, a certain chumrah, so it fits in with the rest of his style of living. You have a guy who doesn't keep all the mitzvahs in the Torah. He's not so medactic, not so learned. So all of a sudden, he's observing a chumrah. The chumrah doesn't fit in. It's like the jewelry on the woman is just wearing pajamas. The chumrah doesn't fit in. It looks a little ridiculous. So there is a concept of yuhara mechziki. Yuhara mechziki yuhara is if a person is volunteering something that he's not on the madrega. But tzitzis in Lovan and Tchelis, it's a pasuk in chumash. What does it have to do with yuhara mechziki yuhara? A person, if you wear four corner garment, you have to put on tzitzis. You should put on tzitzis. If it's available, you should really put on the tchelis. We mentioned before that at the Korban Chatos, you do four zrikas on the four corners on the mizbeach. What if a person has enough dam to do four zrikas and he only does one zrika, and he doesn't do all the four? So the Mishnah gives that as an example of Baltigra. So there's a Rashba in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, a famous Rashba that the Beis Halevi has a whole essay about in his Chuvis. Let's say a person will have a talis and only puts tzitzis on three corners, he won't put it on the fourth corner. Is that bal tigra? He says, no, he's not just not yet said the mitzvah. He'll have tefillin, and instead of having four parshios, he'll only put in three parshios. That's not bal tigra, he's just not yet said the mitzvah. If it's everything's ma'akfim zezeh, he'll take lulavin and esrog, hadasim, and not take arovas. Ma'akfim zezeh, not yet said the mitzvah, that's not bal tigra. So the Rashba explains, and the Beis Halevi has this whole essay about it, but Tigra only applies when there's a mitzvah that should have been done b'shleimusa by doing everything. And you do the mitzvah shalom b'shleimusa, and you could have done it b'shleimusa, so then you're a violation of Bal Tigra. So the Mishnah in Zvochen gives the example. You have a chatos that should have had four zrikas on the four corners of the mizbech, and you only do one zrika, two or three zrikas instead of four, that's a violation of Bal Tigra. So it could well be that this is also a violation of Bal Tigra. If a person has access to tchelis, and he doesn't bother to put on tchelis, if he doesn't wear a four-corner garment, he's not mechuyav to wear tzitzis. The only obligation is, if you're wearing a four-corner garment, then you're obligated to put tzitzis. But if you're wearing already the garment, and tchelis is available, it's probably 99% certain that it is bona fide tchelis. By now, it's way more than 50-50 chance. You're probably 99% certain that this is the bona fide tchelis. So if you have an opportunity to wear tchelis and you don't, so just become the mitzvah shalom b'shleimusa, that should all be pashtus, be a violation of Bal Tigra. L'chore, one should recommend that it's better not to wear the whole arba kafis rather than to wear an arba kafis and not to put on the tchelis. Don't wear an arba kafis at all, so there's no problem. The whole minig that we have, the whole practice that we have that we wear an arba kafis, you're not mechuyav to wear a four-corner garment. The din says if you wear a four-corner garment, you're obligated to put on tzitzis. So Tosis develops this meaning, we should go out of our way to wear a four-corner garment in order to be mechuyav ourselves to wear tzitzis. Where does it come from? So Tosis says, the Gemara in the end of the first parak in Soita comments about Moshe Rabbeinu. He was chalashing to enter Eretz Yisrael. Eschanan al Hashem, hundreds of prayers he offered to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he should let him enter Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara says, what do we want to enter Eretz Yisrael? He wanted to swim in a kineret. He wanted to eat the delicious food of Chelecha Mipiria with his Be'al Mituva. What did he want to go to Eretz Yisrael for? So the Gemara says, in order to fulfill the mitzvah Satli's Boritz. So Tyson says, but if you don't live in Eretz Yisrael, say you're not Mechuyev. So what's the problem? The answer is, a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu will go out of his way to put himself in a situation that he becomes Mechuyev in additional mitzvahs. to be able to do the additional mitzvahs. And Taisa says we should all do the same as we should emulate Moshe Rabbeinu. We should all put on a four-corner garment in order to obligate ourselves to put on tzitzis. Other Rishonim disagree. Other Balei HaTais disagree. They said, "Well, you'll be on the Madrega like Moshe Rabbeinu, put on a four-corner garment. Who do you think you are? Mechzik Yuaro. You think that you're like Moshe Rabbeinu?" I was told to have a relative, distant relative, is a, I don't know, he's a Taimani, some kind of one of the Sephardish countries. He says he remembers when he lived in the Alta Haim, before he moved to Eretz Yisrael, only the rabbi wore a talis. It was a chutzpah for a balabas to wear a talis. Who do you think you are? Like Moshe Rabbein. The rabbis like Dugmas Moshe Rabbein. The balabatim wouldn't wear a talis because of that tainus. Mechzik Yuharo. You put yourself in a situation to obligate yourself to do a mitzvah, that's where someone on the Madrega, Moshe Rabbein. So this relative of mine says he feels bad now that they all moved to Eretz Yisrael and the whole community closed down there. In Tayman or Morocco, wherever he came from, I forgot already. So he says, now they all caved in and they all wear talis. He says, they should observe the old meaning from Al Tehaim. Only the rabbi should wear the talis. He doesn't think that it's right that everybody's picking up everybody else's problem. They had this wonderful meaning based on the other Balei HaTais, that only the rabbi, only big tzaddikim, wear the talis. But we have the meaning, everybody wears a talis and everybody wears a talis cotton. So if you're ready putting yourself in a situation to wear the tzitzis, you should wear the tchelis with the love. Hashem Besser, it would be better not to wear the Arba Conference at all. You won't be in violation of Bar Tigre. If you wear the Arba Conference, you don't put on the tchelis. If it's not available, a different story. It's not available, so you didn't have an option of fulfilling the mitzvah Bishle Musa. So either there's no issue at all of Bar Tigre, or it's Eser Decholoi Seser. Beis Alevi talks about that. If it's only generations, tchelis was not available, maybe you're permitted to wear the Arba Kampis with the love, and without the tchelis, maybe it's based on Eser Decha Lo Sesei. The mitzvah tzitzis is Decha Lo Sesei of Bal Tigra. But if you have tchelis available, so why don't you wear it? So if you don't wear it, you're over on Bal Tigra, possibly over on Bal Tigra. Some people say, well, we have a Masorah. We follow the Masorah. The Masorah is our grandparents, our great-grandparents didn't wear tchelos, so we don't wear tchelos either. That's absurd. What do you mean? Our grandparents didn't have tchelos. That's not a masorah. If they would have had tchelos, they would have put on the tchelos. And last week, Sedrin Parshas told us, the Chumash says, there was a famine in Eretz Yisrael. In the days of Avraham Avinu, there was a famine. Avraham Avinu went down to Egypt. So Yitzchak followed in the footsteps of Avraham Avinu, everything in tradition. The pasuk says the Chumash, he dug the same wells and he gave the wells the same names as his father. Everything exactly the same. So when there was a famine in Eretz Yisrael, Yitzchak Avinu was going to go down to Egypt exactly following everything in the footsteps of Avraham Avinu. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to him, on his way to go down to Egypt, Rashi quotes. Then Hashem appears to him, he says, you're not following in the footsteps of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was not a korban oil tmimo. You're a korban oil. You were brought on Har Moriah as a korban, and it wasn't a mistake. He was a korban. And if you take a korban outside of its correct makom, it becomes nifsal b'yotzei. You're not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. Gur b'aretz hazos. You have to stay here in Chebel Aza, Eretz Plishtim. Chebel Aza was given to Yitzchak Avinu as part of Eretz Zah at that time. But the simple reading of the Chumash sounds like originally Avraham Avinu was only given Eretz Zayin Amamim. And only to Yitzchak was it given Chebel Aza. Kadosh Baruch Hu tells him at that time, I'm giving you Kol Aretz Yisrael. That was Nischadish at that time. That became part of Eretz Yisrael. So Yitzchak thought that he's going in the footsteps exactly the same as his father. And Baruch Shalom told him, you're not going in the footsteps. A lot of times people make a mistake. They don't realize that due to changed circumstances, if they're going to do exactly what their ancestors did, that's not according to the halacha. You find the same in Yeshua ben Nun, before they attacked the city, Yericho, made a chayr. That no, everything is hegdish, no one's allowed to be nana from anything from the city of Yericho. So there was a character who violated the Cherem. His name is Ochan ben Karmi ben Zavdi ben Zerach from Mishpachas Yehuda in Sefer Yeshua. And he violated the Cherem. He took some of the money, took some of the clothing for himself. So the next battle that they waged against the city Ai, the Jewish people lost the battle and some people lost their lives. And Shul ben Nun complains to Ribbono Shel Olam, but you promised us we're going to win all the wars. Spectacular, miraculous winning of all the wars. How come we lost the war in Ai? So the Ribbono Shel Olam says, the Gemara says, it's your fault. Who told you to make a cherem on Yericho? So the Gemara says on the same daf that Moshe Rabbeinu made a cherem on all the five cities that he waged war against. And this guy, Ochan ben Karmi, he violated every single cherem from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Marsha quotes the Kasha from the earlier Achrayim. So what was the Rebbeinu Shlom's complaint against Yeshua ben Nun? Who told you to do such a stupid thing? He just followed in the footsteps of Moshe Rabbeinu. Exactly the same. Moshe Rabbeinu made a cherem five times on the cities that he waged war against. Sich Melech Amori, Og Melech Aboshin, every time, five times. And the same guy violated everything. So Yeshua ben Nun went exactly the same. So the Marsha says that's a mistaken Kasha. That's not doing exactly the same as Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu made the cherem at a time that there wasn't yet a din of Kol Yisrael Arev Mzeh Bzeh. So whoever will violate an Avera, he will be responsible. The rest of Kol Yisrael won't be punished. But the Gemara says in the same daf, all in the same daf in Sanhedrin, Mishaori Yisrael is HaYarden. The Jews crossed over the Yarden, and right away they went to Hagrizman Harevo, and they had the Brachas Aklalas. Then the din of Kol Yisrael Arev Mzeh Bzeh set in. Now everybody's going to be punished because of the sins of the Yochid. So Yeshua ben Nun thought that he's doing exactly the same as Moshe Rabbeinu, but it wasn't exactly the same. It's in a different generation, a different story. It's not exactly the same. A lot of times people think they're doing exactly the same as their ancestors, and due to changed circumstances, it's not at all the same. There are a lot of dinim and shulchan aruch that no longer apply to Zman Hazeh. But Moshe Feinstein has tshuvas in every generation. The Gedolim wrote tshuvas. The dinim stay the same, but the world keeps on changing. So you don't always apply the same sif. Sometimes instead of sif aleph, you apply sif yud aleph. Sometimes you apply sif chof aleph. Basa b'cholab is always osa b'ano. Sometimes it's basa b'cholab derais, it's osa b'ano. Sometimes it's basa b'cholab derabon, and it's osa b'achila muta b'ano. And sometimes it's not even osa b'achila. You wash it out, you rinse out the milk, and it's muta b'achila. So you have many simonim and many sifim. And it tells you all the details. When is it osa, when is it muta? Over here, we're not saying that the dinim of the Torah changed. The dinim of the Torah never changed. The Rambam lists that as one of the 13 principles of faith of the Jewish religion. And in our generation, that's the main crux of the dispute between the Orthodox and non-Orthodox. Non-Orthodox, well, some of them don't believe in God. Some of them don't believe in Torah and Hashemayim. But the main crux of the dispute really is not so much, that's a little silly, you don't believe in God. You don't believe in the Torah and Shema, but they even those who do believe in the Torah and Shema, but they believe that the laws of the Torah can change. They have the ability to change the laws of the Torah. And the Orthodox position is like the Ramarash, it's also Torah Losi Machlevis. Laws of the Torah never change, but the world keeps on changing. So the details of the case are always different. It may seem superficially that it's exactly the same Shaila as it was 100 years ago, but a lot of times not the same. So Talmud Chacham, Amora HaRuah, has to keep his eyes open and to see, is it exactly the same? Is the din the same? Or has the din changed? Take another, many examples like that. The Magen Avraham says, Magen Avraham lived in Poland. He's the standard commentary on the side of the Shulchan Aruch Aruch Chaim. So he lived in Poland and he spoke Yiddish. So he says, when you count Sfiras Aimer, you should say the smaller number first. Let's say, Lag Ba'aimer, you don't say Hayom Shloshim Shlosha Yomim. You say Hayom Shlosha Ushloshim Yom. Why? Why do you say the smaller number first? So the Magen Avraham writes, because we all speak Yiddish, and in Yiddish you always say the smaller number first, Drei and Drei Sig, you don't say Drei Sig and Drei. So, and the Gemara says in Yuma, that whenever you have to fulfill a mitzvah of speaking, and you have to say larger numbers, smaller numbers, you should say it, Marki Asrei, Marki Asrei. The Tanu who came from that part of Eretz Yisrael where it was normal in speech to say the larger number first, would fulfill the mitzvah by saying the larger number first. The Tanu came from that part of Eretz Yisrael, where it was normal to say the smaller number first, said the smaller number first. So the Magen Avraham writes, we all speak Yiddish, you always say the smaller number first. So the way to count Sfira is by saying the smaller number first. Most people today do not speak Yiddish. And in modern Hebrew, you don't say the smaller number first. And in modern English, you don't say the smaller number first. In ancient English, they used to say like that. Ancient English, there was some kind of a... The queen was in the parlor, the king was counting his money, so I already forgot the whole thing. And there were 24 blackbirds baked in a pie. We don't talk like that, 24 blackbirds. Say 24 blackbirds, or bluebirds, or whatever the poem says. Nobody today talks English like that. Maybe in Arabic, I don't know, you have to. have to ask the neighbors whether in Arabic maybe they say the smaller number. So those people who live in Arab countries, they should say the smaller number. But those who live in America talk English. Those who live in Israel talk modern Hebrew. They always say the larger number first. So everybody's sleeping. So several Rabbanim published essays last year. It's already high time that we should change it. The Rabbanim in every generation have to be alert, they have to be on the ball, they have to realize if you live in a different, and under different circumstances, so the psak is going to come out different. We're not changing the psak, the din is the same. The din is whatever is the normal way of speaking, that's the way you should fulfill a mitzvah where you have to speak and say numbers.
But can't you learn something from the fact that even though in Svara it makes sense to say that Cheles should not be a pershut, no? It's better at more than a 50-50 at minimum. It's a suffix and a doraisa. By the same logic, since there has been such hesitancy on behalf of many Mori Hora, even though the logic makes sense, right, in terms of a suffix, doraisa, lusama, etc. So, doesn't that say something about the nature of the mitzvah, given the fact that it really is kind of like the beged that defines the Jewish people and kind of jump into the tcheles being the tcheles? There's consequences in terms of kind of, you know, how a community grows, meaning it could be. I mean, how should we take into account, the fact that even though Rabbi Yashiv tend to agree with the reading of the original Rebbe, he himself didn't wear tzeilas, and the disciple didn't wear tzeilas, and sometimes he doesn't wear tzeilas. So, meaning there seems to be an undercurrent among B'Talmei Chachamim to be nervous about this change, even though alone this makes sense.
The people from the tzeilas factory gave a presentation to Rabbi Yashiv. So he asked them, how much does it cost? And I told him $100. So they said, he asked them, do you have enough for 40,000 people? So they said, no. So he asked, and if tomorrow morning 40,000 people will want, how much will it cost? They said, well, if there's a small supply and such a big demand, it'll cost $500 for each pair of tzitzis. So he told them, I can't wear tzitzis. If I'll wear Tcheles, every Jew in Meir Sharm and every Jew in Bnei Brak will want to wear Tcheles, and they can't afford it. They can't put enough milk and cheese and eggs and butter and meat on the table for their children. Their children are suffering from malnutrition as it is, but they're so frum, some adaktik and mitzvahs, they'll give their last penny to pay for the Tcheles instead of putting nutritious food on the table. So he said, I can't do it, I personally can't do it. I'll put people's lives b'sakon. Okay, said it's a suffix, not kind of suffocious. So some idiot who was there printed the whole story in a sefer. Yeah. So he defeated the whole purpose of not wearing the tchelas. He doesn't want people to know that he thinks that it may be correct. You really should. So that day, when they showed him that someone printed in a sefer, so he said they should please print in his name that he doesn't hold from the tchelas. So someone wrote a whole tshuva that's nonsense, and they put his name on it. And that tshuva is incorporated in the two or three volumes of all the tshuvas of Rabbi Yashiv. And while he was alive, they asked him, this tshuva doesn't make any sense. I didn't write it. I didn't write the tshuva. He said, I asked them to publish in my name that I don't hold from the tcheles, because he didn't want to cause a sakana to people's lives. The whole hesitance to wear the tcheles, unfortunately, is because it didn't come from Bnei Brak and it didn't come from Meir Sharm. It started from the YU guys. It started from the Mizrahi circles in Eretz Yisrael. So the people, the Frumid people, don't want to have anything to do. They suspect anything that comes from YU, anything that comes from the Mizrahi must be by definition wrong. But many of the Rabbanim are realizing that it's right, it's not wrong. So more and more Rabbanim from the Badats and more Rabbanim from Bnei Brak are wearing the tchelas. They're overcoming their dislike for the modern Orthodox, and they're coming to realization, this is really the tchelas. Unfortunately, there's such a period within Klal Yisrael that depending what the source of the Chiddush is, that's how you determine whether it's good or not. You don't judge on its own merits. One of the Rabbanim in the Yeshiva, Rabbi Zvon Chalab, is a very colorful character. See, he was a rabbi in the shul for many years. So he used to give a weekly shiur in Gemara Chagiga. He used to always say over things from the Turi Evin, from the Shangsari Sefer on Chagiga. And then he would say over the Torah, and then he would disagree. He would say, he holds that he can argue. So he had one balabas who always would argue, no, the Torah Evan is right and you're wrong. Torah Evan is always right. So he started for a few weeks to say over backwards. He would say over his thoughts in the name of the Torah Evan, then he would say the Torah Evan's thoughts in his own name. So the guy would always defend what he called the Torah Evan. The person didn't know how to judge which made more sense. Turyevin's made more sense than Rabbi Chalap's. So the Baal Bas didn't know which one makes more sense. Turyevin says it has to be right by definition. That's not the way you're supposed to judge. You're supposed to judge based on the merits of the argument, not judge based on who the speaker is. Kabbalah Samus Mimisha Amore. So really, I don't think it's a problem of Masoro. I don't think it's a problem of Yuharo. If you have an opportunity to fulfill a mitzvah at Torah, you should fulfill a mitzvah. I would think that it's better not to wear the Arba Kantos at all, rather than to wear the tzitzis without putting in the tchelas. Okay, enough for the tchelas. Maybe we'll raise other issues, or if you want to harp on the tchelas, talk some more. Yes?
I just have a question about what Rashi says. Rashi says it looks like a midnight sky. What does Rashi say in Menachot, like, that it's supposed to remind us of, like, Yitzhak Mitzrayim from, like, the Yom, and then, like, it goes to the sky, which reminds us of Harsina, and the Kisei Atav. So, like, what do you say, the Yom?
Should be the daytime.
What?
Sounds more like the daytime.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Quite a few years ago, maybe 10, 15 years ago, I was in Los Angeles. So a man comes over to me, he wants to know, are there any sources in the Talmud or the Midrashim that the tchelis is poisonous? I said, why? He tells me he works for the federal government, he's a chemist, and he has to test the dye in the clothing whether it's poisonous, because a lot of times children, sometimes adults, chew on their sleeves. If it's poisonous, it's going to be a problem. So the government doesn't allow you to put the poisonous dyes in clothing. So he says, for the fun of it, he tested the tchelis strings, and he says, it's poisonous. So he wants to know, are there any sources? I start to think, so I said, the only thing that comes to mind is that Rashi and Chumash, that tchelis loshen tichla death, that is supposed to remind us of the makas b'choris which occurred at midnight. So Rashi thinks that the color of the tchelis is the color of the sky at night, dark, dark black. I said, I don't know. Maybe it's supposed to be poisonous because of that. I don't know.
If it says that it's supposed to be like one string, like the tchelis, so how did Rashi get it to two or four strings? I just
don't understand. In Chumash it says they should put psil tchelis. So the question, what does the word psil mean? So many assume psil means a string of tchelis. So the Rambam thinks one string of eight, and the Raiva thinks one string of four. But Rashi and Chumash says the word psil means to wind around, to wrap around. Like naftul elikim niftalti, odori keshiv saltol. Sidreit, Rashi says. The Rashi says, "V'nasnal tzitzis hakana psil tchelis." They should wind around the tchelis, around the string. So the word psil doesn't mean a string; it means wrapping around. And that's the source for the practice that the Gemara has, that we have, that we wrap around. We make krichas and chulyas and so.
So, as you were explaining the story of Rabbi Lashiv and why he doesn't wear tchelis specifically, but for Spartan, it's a very touchy
topic, and like I know Rav
Avadia doesn't really wear
tchelas,
so how does
how
do we explain it through
Rav
Avadia now? Why doesn't he wear
tchelas
specifically?
I'm not familiar.
I don't know. Is there a greater
mitzvah
that you get if you wear
tchelas? Someone should really ask him. He's very open. He'll tell you right away. No, you ask him, he's on the ball, clear. Someone should really, I don't know, maybe they did it.
Is there a greater mitzvah that you get if you wear tchelis instead of the regular YTT? Like, is there a specific significance?
Sure, the mitzvah is incomplete. If you only have the lavan without the tchelis, it's an incomplete mitzvah. One opinion of the Gemara is that it's so incomplete you don't even have a partial kima mitzvah. So that opinion has never been accepted. There's Rafi paskin like that. We paskin, you get an incomplete kima mitzvah if you have the white without the blue. But you should try to have a complete kima mitzvah, for sure.
So Rashid was bringing down the story about the community in Morocco where the people wouldn't wear the talis gadol except for the Rav. So I just had a question that was like kind of related to that. The Mishnah Berurah in Yudayim of Tzitzis brings down a drash of Maril that you sumach on gedil and tasalach that you should only wear talis gadol if you're married, right? Based on gedil and tasalach. Then he says it's a davar tamua. So like based on that, where does the psak come from nowadays that people only wear
a lot of psak, it's a minig. Rabbi Soloveitchik used to think that the minig is that we're not matriach single people to put on a talis, like we just said. In some communities, only the rabbi wore it. So if you're single, so you're not so serious. If you have to get married, then you're more serious, and then it makes sense to do the minis chasidus putting on four corner garment in order to be mechuyev in tzitzis. But he thought that most communities where they don't wear tzitzis, they don't wear talis when they're single. The other thing is you don't bother to wear a talis. But if you want to wear a talis, gezuntay. He said he doesn't really think that that the minig is bedavke not to wear a talis. You don't have to wear a talis. And he used to think that on Yom Kippur the minig to wear a talis is a separate minig, and even all the single people should also wear a talis on Yom Kippur. Because Yom Kippur is a different reason. You wear the talis because of Kedosh Hashem Mechubot. And the Iri writes in the end of Masechta Shabbos that on Yom Kippur, the Gemara seems to say, because there's no oneg, so you have to double up and observe more kibbut. So kibbut is to have nice begodim. So the meaning is that many communities, they wear a kippur only on Yom Kippur and not on Rosh Hashanah, and they wear the talis by Ma'ariv and by Shacharis and by Mincha and by Nila all day long. So nice begodim on Yom Kippur is for the sake of fulfilling mitzvah kibbut. So he thought, Rabbi Zaleshi thought that even single people all year long don't wear a talis. Yom Kippur, they should wear a talis. For slichas, he's supposed to wear a talis. So he thought Yom Kippur is the day of slichas. He thought everybody should wear a talis on Yom Kippur. It's not the common practice.
But where else do we find the mitzvah of Sidi Oraisa that we say we're not matriarch people who are not married?
No, you're not mechuyev to. The whole thing to volunteer to wear a four corner garment is a midas chasid. Once you wear the four corner garment, then you're absolutely obligated to put in tzitzit. But you're not mechuyev to wear the four corner garment. So that's a midas chasid. So the meaning developed that the single people don't do the midas chasid.
Why does Hashem keep looking to Adam Yitzchak and Yaakov that he promises like Eretz Yisrael?
Why does he promise each one?
No, like what does he keep looking to them multiple times that he promises like Eretz Yisrael?
The Ramban HaChumash writes that Shvua and a Bris are the same thing. Sometimes it says Bris Abraham, sometimes it says Shvua Shem Shvatei L'Abraham Avichem. So Shvua and a Bris are the same thing, and what it means is Al Koponim. It means even if you don't deserve it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised he's going to deliver. So if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't have made a Bris and he wouldn't have made a Shvua, so then the Jewish people would be the Amanim for as long as we behave. And once we misbehave, he can throw us out, he can replace us. But he made a Shvua, he made a Bris, it means Al Koponim. Then he promised us Eretz Yisrael. And he gave Eretz Yisrael to Avraham Avinu. He made a kinyan. He told Avraham Avinu, walk around the borders. And the tradition has it, the Gemara says, that was the kinyan. Avraham Avinu was kind Eretz Yisrael at that time. So what did God have to make a shvua? I swear I'm going to give you Eretz Yisrael. He gave him Eretz Yisrael already. So the answer is no. The shvua was Al Kalponim. Al Kalponim means, despite the fact that the halacha declares it's an international law of kibush melchama, that if one country wages war against the other, so the country who wins the war acquires all the property, the automobiles and the homes and the fields and the farms and everything, all the food, all the money, everything belongs to the winning army. So Eretz Yisrael is an exception to the rule. Even though Eretz Yisrael was conquered by the other nations, the Jewish people never lost their ownership. In the 7 years of Golas Bavel, the Jews never lost their ownership. They belonged to Klal Yisrael. And after the Churban Bayis Sheni, Eretz Yisrael belonged to the Jewish people. And the British didn't give us Eretz Yisrael in 1948, and it belonged to us all along. The British were stealing it, and the Turks were stealing it. All the people who were ruling Eretz Yisrael, it always belonged to the Jewish people. We never lost our ownership over Eretz Yisrael. That's what the Chazon Ish points out. That's what Rav Soloveitchik always used to insist. You shouldn't think that the British, it's very nice of them, but we shouldn't have the attitude that they gave us Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael belonged to us. So that's all because of that Shvua. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave the Shvua to Avraham and to Yitzchak and to Yaakov, that their descendants, see, Avraham Avinu had two sons, they had Yitzchak and Yishmael. So Kadosh Baruch Hu first makes a bris with Avraham, his descendants. Now, which of the descendants makes the bris with Yitzchak and not with Yishmael? Then Yitzchak had twin sons. So that tradition has it, one was Jewish, one was Yigoy, even though they were twins, same father, same mother. They were not identical twins, but they were twins. So Eretz Yisrael, the Kedushas Yisrael, only went to Yaakov, and Esav was a Goy Gomer. Esav was not Jewish. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to make a bris, and then Yaakov Avinu was Bitosu Shleima. All of his children were Jewish. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a bris with each one of the others. Eretz Yisrael belongs to you, it'll never be taken away. If it'll be taken away, it still belongs to you. even if it's taken away through Kibish Mulchama, and that we should have lost our ownership based on the international principle which the halacha holds from, of Kibish Mulchama, so this is overriding. Eretz Yisrael belongs to the Jewish people. That's what Rashi writes in the opening Posek on Chumash, that the Umas Oilam always complained against the Jews, listem atem, you ganavim, you stole Palestine. Palestine belongs to the Palestinians. The United Nations was supposed to bring it up, I think last week, Palestinians want to bring up the vote. I haven't been in touch with the news. They wanted the General Assembly to vote, not that they should be members of the United Nations, that they should recognize Palestine as a separate nation. They claim that they're the Palestinians and Palestine belongs to the Palestinians. They were never the Palestinians. They have documented in the 1920s when they started calling the Arabs Palestinians, they used to riot in Eretz Yisrael. They don't want to be called Palestinians, the Arabs. They ain't no such thing as Palestinians. The whole term Palestinians was just invented 30, 40 years ago. They were never called Palestinians. Palestine, the one who made Chorev, the second base, he wanted to wipe off the whole name of Yehuda, Eretz Yehuda, so he called it Palestine. So now these Chevre, they claim they're Palestinians and this is Palestine, so therefore this is their national homeland. All of Eretz Yehuda belongs to the Jewish people, including Chevel Aza. Chevel Aza, Avram Levinu will only give Shivan, Eretz Shiva Amimim. Yitzchak Avinu was given, the Gemara says this, that Losid Lavoi, when we will observe Shabbos, us to, if we will fulfill Einik Shabbos, the reward will be us to Sanagal Hashem, Birkapticha Abomas Yerz V'achal Ticha Nachlas Yankav Avicha Ki Pi Hashem Diber. A pasuk in Yishai, so the Gemara says, what does it mean Nachlas Yaakov Avicha? Not Nachlas Yitzchak, not Nachlas Avram. Avram Avinu's Nachla was only his Eretz Zayin Amim. Yitzchak got a bigger area, Yitzchak got Chevel Aza when he was going down to go to Mitzrayim. Kadosh Baruch Hu said, Gur Baratz Azoz, Hiluchai Tenis called Haratz Yisrael. So in modern sense, he was given more of Eretz Yisrael, more than Eretz Zayin Amim. But Yaakov Avinu was given Ufaratz the Yom of a Kate Mavitz, a fine of an Egma, more. So that's what the Pasuk is, Lassi Lavoi. I'm going to get Nachlas Yanka Avicha, all of Eretz Yisrael, Hashleima. The whole big area of Eretz Yisrael, not the small area. So everything belongs to the Jews. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made this bris with Avram and with Yitzchak on Yankov, because Avram had two sons, so he had to make the bris again with Yitzchak and not with Yishmael. Then Yitzchak had twin sons, so he had to make the bris with Yankov and not with Esav. So now Yankov was Mitos Shleimo, all of his children are Jewish. So these brisen that were made with the Obis apply to us. We are the Bnei Avram, Yitzchak, and Yankov, and Eretz Yisrael is supposed to belong to us. Why should the first wraparound and the last one be love? And the Gemara has a Psat Rosha from a Pasuk, the first few lines in Perikat Tchela. So the Gemara figures it out from the Psukim. Lechat Tchela. The Gemara says, but yeah, but how you wrap around is not Miyakev. Yeah.
What are the guidelines for a Jew going to non-Jewish secular court system? There are several issues, maybe with the Moser, or we don't want the non-Jews to enforce laws. It manifests itself in several issues, some of them recent issues, like Matisse of a pet, or if there's a pedophile in the community, or if there's a monetary dispute. Like, what are the guidelines?
If there's a dispute between a Jew and a non-Jew, he's allowed to go to a secular court. A dispute between two Jews, you're not allowed to go to a secular court. That's the opening pasuk in Mishpatim. Eino Mishpatim, Shetosim Lefneim, Lefneim Lo Lefnei Arkois. A Jew is, it's called Chil Hashem. A Jew should bring a case against another Jew to a secular court. In America, a lot of times you want to sue the insurance company, but you can't sue the insurance company directly. The other guy crashed into me, or something like that. So I'm suing him in order to collect from the non-Jewish insurance company. So that's accepted in America that's permissible. But I'm not really suing the other guy. Really, my intention is to sue the insurance company. To sue another Jew is not allowed, unless I'm entitled to my money, though. It's not an avera to go to secular court. It's not an avera like eating chazer. It's not an avera like being mechal Shabbos that absolutely is prohibited. But it is, if you can get your money back by going to a din Torah, so then it's a chil Hashem to go to secular court. Let's say the other guy's not religious, and Bezdin sends him a hazmana, and he says, go fly kite, I'm not interested. So then the Beis Din will give the person permission to go to secular court to collect that amount of money that he would have been entitled to if he would have gone to a Jewish Beis Din. You're not allowed to take more if the, both parties are Jewish. You're not allowed to take more than you're entitled to according to Halacha. But the Beis Din will give you permission to go to secular court. It's not that going to secular court is an Avera. It's an Avera, so you're not allowed to go in order to regain your $100. It's an Avera if it could have been taken care of in a Jewish Beis Din and you choose to go to Goyish court. So that's a Bizoyan. You're Mabaza the Jewish system, Mabaza the Torah. But if there's no other way to collect the money, you have no choice. We don't have, the Jewish community doesn't have any police enforcement. So if a person is a criminal, see, in the days of the Gemara, the Goyish government would sometimes be interested in holding up the Jewish community just for money. So they would ask, who are the rich Jews and who has thousands of dollars stashed away in their mattresses? They didn't have bank accounts. They didn't have any records who's rich and who's poor. On Shabbos, everybody dresses nice, and on the weekdays, everybody dresses like the weekdays. So they had no way to know who was rich and who was not rich. So if they'll ask one of the Jews, tell me who's the richest Jew in the community, and I tell him, he's the rich Jew, he has all the money stashed away in his mattress, so that's Mesira. Because they're going to take away his money, so I'm causing he should be mafsid money, they may yet kill him. They'll kill him for his money also. So Mesira in the days of the Gemara was considered, all the generations was considered a series of it. But it's only called Mesira if it's Shaloi Kedin. The government is not entitled to take away his money. So that's Shaloi Kedin. What if the guy violated some other for which he deserves to go to prison? He's cheating on income tax. And whoever cheats on income tax makes me pay twice as much. More than half the people in America are not paying income tax. That was one of the debates in the presidential campaign. More than half the people in America are not paying income tax. And those are the people who are supporting Mr. Obama. So we'll never get rid of that party in America. They're getting money from the government. So they support this kind of government that keeps on doling out money to them. So the... If you have people who cheat on income tax, so they're governing for me, the people who do pay have to pay twice as much, more than twice as much, because of those who are cheating. So I should really warn the guy, look here, you're cheating on income tax, you better pay tax or I'm going to master you to the government. So if I warn him in advance, and then he still doesn't listen, I master him to government, that's not called Mesira. I warned him in advance, and he did an issa, he's stealing, and the government is going to put him in jail, rightfully so. They're not stealing his money illegally. He's supposed to pay taxes. That's not what often happens is the following. The different prisons, the federal prisons and the state prisons. Federal prisons, that's where they learn daf yomi, have blood kosher. Those are very swimming pools. Those are very nice prisons. State prisons are miserable. They'll put you in a cell together with a Muslim who's going to kill you, and he'll be a homosexual. They murder each other in the state prisons. And if the guard doesn't like you, if the guard is Jewish and he thinks that you did a chil Hashem for stealing, he'll beat you up. No laws. It's leis din v'leis din. State prisons, everything is mamshim. Federal prison, not so heavy. So if they're going to put a guy away in a state prison for some crime that he did, he will probably suffer more than the law requires. Because state prisons are mamshim. It's yishkala yoshabeinu. So that's a question. That may be Mesira, even though the guy did an avla, he did something illegal, and he deserves to be punished, but it doesn't deserve to be punished more than the law requires. And whoever goes to the state prison usually does suffer more than the law requires. But if the guy's cheating on income tax, they send him to a different prison. They send him to the Blood Kosher Daf Yomi prison, the federal prisons. And usually they don't suffer so much over there. So that's what he deserves. So strictly speaking, that's not really Mesira. So the pedophiles, we have no way to control them. So that's not Mesira. So you have to give them over to the government and protect the Jewish community. Mitzitza is a problem. We don't want the government to regulate our observance of the mitzvahs, but it's really ridiculous that the percentage of the incidence of herpes by the Jewish community is approximately the same as the secular, the rest of the world community. It's not supposed to be the same. It should be way less. The Jews are always healthier. Whenever they had all the plagues throughout all the generations, the Jews went to mikveh, the men went to mikveh, the women went to mikveh, the men had a bris milah, the men would be cleaner. The Jews always suffered much less than the women. The herpes should be much lower percentage in the Jewish population. The reason why it's approximately the same is exactly because they're doing mitzitza b'peh. So it's the same high incidence. That's supposed to be the same. So they're really causing Jewish babies to die. It's unbelievable that you can't talk sense into these people. They're killing people. And some of the people, they're not killing, but some of them are affected. They don't die, but they won't be able to function for the rest of their life. Their minds won't function. And others will be cured. Others will be healed. But why should you make the child sick in the first place? And even if it's not herpes, that's so serious. Why can't you cause other infections? They bring babies to hospitals. I have a daughter who was a nurse in Columbia Presbyterian for 5 years in the baby's hospital. She saw cases of herpes. All the cases were babies a week after the bris from Hasidish families, because all the families come to be with the baby. All Hasidish families have mitzitza b'peh. That's scandalous. Why should we have the same high percent? There's hardly any percent. Why should we have the same percentage as the gun? We should have way less. The reason why we have the same is because they're doing mitzitza b'peh. It's terrible. But we don't want the government to stick their nose into our business. But the rabbanim should have the brains not to allow mitzitza b'peh. I live in Washington Heights. Rabbi Breuer would never allow mitzitza b'peh. Rabbi Soloveitchik wouldn't permit mitzitza b'peh. There was once Rabbi Soloveitchik told us he once attended a bris. The mother was a Hungarian mother. He insisted he's going to do mitzitza b'peh. So Rabbi Soloveitchik insisted he shouldn't. He kept insisting back and forth. They couldn't agree to do the bris milah. Rabbi Soloveitchik finally said, if my father would be here, his father was Moshe Soloveitchik, son of Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, if my father would be here, he would not permit you to do mitzitza b'peh. So I'm very tolerant. If you keep on insisting, okay. So the baby is still alive. Okay, the baby is a prominent rabbi in New York City, and he's still alive, he's kicking, he's functioning well. But still, you do mitzitza b'peh, it's a big sakana. So it's really, the Jews should always be in the forefront of healthy things. Look in the days of the Gemara, they heard from the on the cutting edge of medicine. The rabbis in the days of the Gemara were always hearing the latest news, the cutting edge of science and cutting edge of medicine. So they heard that there's a sakana if you eat fish and meat that's cooked together. They said you better not because you can get sick. Today it turns out, Magen Avraham writes that we haven't heard in centuries, and he doesn't think there's anything wrong with eating fish and meat that's cooked together. But the days of the Tanaim, they heard this is suffering the sakana. Rabbi Yehuda told everyone, don't do this and don't do that, you got to be careful. The Jews were always in the forefront of being careful. And now the Jews are more overweight than the Goyim, and the Jews smoke more than the Goyim. We should be the ones in the forefront of doing hygienic things and having less sickness and cleanliness. It's terrible. The Goyim are making fun of us, that we're killing our babies. The Torah says the Goyim will look at the Jews. They're going to say, wow, Rakam Chachom Menavon Hagoy Hagor Azeh. Such an intelligent people. For so many centuries, they looked at the Jews. Exactly, Rakam Chachom Menavon Hagoy Hagor Azeh. The Jews had suffered less from all the epidemics and all the plagues. We suffered less because we were more careful on hygiene. And in our generation, the people think that they have to carry over all the traditions from their grandparents. The traditions from the grandparents were that we follow the latest news in medicine. We're on the cutting edge of medicine. You listen to what the doctors of your generation do. We should do like the Tanoim. The Tanoim listen to the doctors of your generation. We should do the same. We should listen to the doctors of our generation. So instead, these Rabbanim, they think, no, we have to do. When they did Mitzitza B'peh, they thought that was, the Gemara thinks that Mitzitza is healthy. Today, they don't see any medical use in Mitzitza whatsoever. In the days of the Gemara, Mitzitza was done to prevent infection. Today they have antiseptics, they don't need any mitzitza. So that's what the Tiferes Yisrael writes on Mishnah. Tiferes Yisrael was not an apikoros, he was a holy tzaddik. He used to sit in talis and tefillin all day long, he went to the mikveh in the morning, and then he used to sit and write his commentary on the Mishnah. He's a holy tzaddik. He lived in Germany, so he was a Talmud of Rebbe Kiveger. So he writes, he doesn't think you need mitzitza at all, Bisman. The Pashtus is really right, mitzitza has no role at all today. Instead of the Rabbanim opening up their eyes and waking up, and we're supposed to be, we look in the medicine in the Gemara, it looks ridiculous, we live. If you look at any medical book that was printed 50 years ago, it will also look ridiculous. And 50 years ago, they looked at a medical book printed 50 years before was also ridiculous. Every 20 years they discover new things in medicine. They start to wonder, how could we have been so stupid to have thought otherwise? They had such stupid ideas. But that's what the Chazal listened to the doctors of their generation. And in the days of the Gemara, this was on the cutting edge. This was the latest news in medicine. In every generation, the Jews should do like the Tanoim. We should listen to the doctors of our generation to listen to the latest chidushim that they have.
Did you mention that fish and meat were cooked together was like an idea that doesn't have relevance anymore? Or did you say that a rabbinical authority said that it doesn't seem to make sense anymore?
The Magen Avraham, who lived in the late 1600s, writes he doesn't think we have to observe it anymore. The Nevi Yehuda, who lived in the 1700s, says maybe the doctors of our times are wrong, maybe we should still follow them, maybe there is something to it. I don't know, from the 1700s till that's already 300 years later, maybe by now they've come to the realization that there's absolutely nothing with nothing, garnish with garnish. But in every generation, the Rabbanim were talking about the topic, at least there's a discussion. You have to do things that are healthy. So what's healthy? So listen to the doctors, what's healthy. In the days of the Gemara, they listen to their doctors. But medicine has moved on. Medicine isn't where it was. In every generation, you look at the books in medicine from 50 years before. It's a joke. How could they have ever thought like that? So in the days of the Gemara, they thought that that was a sakana. So the Rebbe Yehuda says, maybe it's still a sakana. Not sure? We're not sure. The sakana only is if the meat and the fish were cooked together. The women are always makbid. You have to have two separate forks. You can't even eat the meat, but the same fork that you eat the fish. That's not a sakana. That's a befeirish. That's not a sakana. Even in the days of the Gemara, they thought it's a sakana. Sakana is only if they were cooked together. Not if you eat them together in the same place. So the Jewish people are so careful about hygiene. They're going to have the same person is going to eat fish and meat with two different plates and two different forks. He's going to eat the cholent that's absolutely unhealthy. He's going to be overweight. He's going to be smoking. He's going to die young because of the lung cancer. What kind of stupidity is that? We're so worried about the fish and the meat, which is an imaginary. It may possibly be a suffix sakana. This is really a suffix sakana. Smoking is a vadai suffix sakana. And overweight is a vadai suffix sakana. So they think it's halach. It's not halach. It's halach. You have to take care of your health. How do you know what to take care of the health? You have to listen to the doctors of your generation.
So she was talking about how Rav Eliashiv and like the entire story of how he didn't want his students to buy tefillos because it was too expensive. So why did Rav Eliashiv see from the first place that why aren't his students being so, like, why aren't they eating healthy and why aren't they making enough money to provide for the families? Like, but if you're gonna see from the previous thing that not to buy tefillos, then why apply the same logic towards that? Doesn't make sense.
It's very hard to get people to change. To hear Meir Shor have their system, they go, Rabbi Yashiv is going to come. Whenever Rabbi Yashiv said something that they didn't like, they used to throw stones at his windows, throw stones at him. He once gave a psak that you're allowed to move a kever from one place to the other. They were throwing stones at him. Rabbi Shlomo Zalman also, he would ask him a shayla about birth control. A friend of mine told me, yes, and a shayla. He says, I don't want them to break my windows. I'm not going to say a psak. So then this Rebbe told him, but this boy who wants to, a boy has a girlfriend, he knew the girl for years, so they wanted to get married now and practice birth control because none of them went to college yet. And if you're going to tell them to wait to marry another 4 years, they're probably going to sin. So Reb Shlomo Zalman didn't want to say, he said, you're not going to get a psak from me about birth control. Then this Rebbe told Reb Shlomo Zalman, but the boy is the grandson of so-and-so who used to learn with you b'chavrusa in Eretz Yisrael. So he said, okay, it's a different story. And he gave him a psak about birth control, what to do. He said, they're going to break his windows. They're going to stone Rabbi Yashiv also. He can't say whatever he wants. It's a crazy society here. They're wild people here. It's not like in America, live and let live. Very difficult here.
Is it okay to wear mesh tzitzit?
I think it's assumed that mesh is not considered a beggar. You have Paretz Meru Bal Oimed, every garment has holes in it, but the holes are so tiny, and there's much more cloth than there is holes. But if you have the mesh, where the holes are much bigger than the cloth, I think that's assumed that it's not even called a beged. So you don't fulfill them, it's some citizens with that.
I have a question that's related to this. Would you say, you did ask a question about, like,
I asked a lawyer a couple of years ago, doesn't the American law have a hayru ashur that you can give a guy the death penalty if he pulls off the biggest geneva in the history of the world? So the lawyer told me, no, there's no such law, hayru ashur. In halacha you have, Besdin can give misa lo hayru ashur. He says, in America there ain't no such thing. I don't know. He caused, they say that it's the biggest geneva in the history of the world. I thought they should have given him the death penalty. So many people committed suicide. He ruined people's lives. I don't know. If he does tshuva after the 150 years of sitting in prison, if he'll do tshuva, okay, so then we'll accept him back into society. If a person does an aveira and they give him malchus and he does tshuva, they have to have both. He has to do tshuva and they have to give him the malchus. If they don't give him the punishment, the tshuva doesn't help. And if he does, if he only has one without the other, it's not enough. Rambam says you need both. So if he'll sit in prison 150 years and then he'll do tshuva, so we'll give him an aliyah. He's not an observant person. He's not a religious man. Unfortunately, maybe he'll become religious.
Two tzitzis related questions. First of all, what's the basis for putting on a talis to be shliach tzibur to get an aliyah? And two, if the only talis available to you does not have talis on it, should you put it on or should you just do it without talis?
I think the Shulchan Aruch has assumed that at a kavadat tzibur, the Baal Tefillah, or one who gets an aliyah, or the Baal Kori, the one who says Kaddish, years ago they used to have the one who said Kaddish walked up to the front, and he was the shliach tzibur. Only one person said Kaddish. So whoever is Shliach HaTzibah should wear a talis out of Kavod HaTzibah. But to be dressed formally, to be fully dressed formally, if you're representing the Tzibah. The only the talis HaTzibah doesn't have tchelus. Okay, so there's no tchelus. You have no choice now. Well, if you have a choice of putting on tchelus, so you put on. Put on tchelus will take an hour. I don't have time not to put on tchelus. There's no violation of Baltic. It's better to put on the talis out of Kavod HaTzibur, I think, rather than to get the aliyah without the talis.
If you're punished for wearing a baguette that has, like, that doesn't have tzitzis on it, right? Four corner garments doesn't have tzitzis, that would be an aveira, right?
It's not an aveira, it's a bit la mitzvah. It's like you didn't like tefillin one day, you didn't do an aveira. It's not aveira to wear a four corner garment, it's just when you wear a four corner garment, you have an obligation to put on tzitzis, you didn't fulfill a mitzvah. A bit la mitzvah. It says in the Medrash that two Gehenims, there's a Gehenim Shalesh and a Gehenim Shalshelek. Gehenim Shalesh is for the people who were hot-blooded and went ahead and did an aver. Gehenim Shalshelek is for the people who are cold-blooded and they didn't run to do a mitzvah. Then the Medrash, Oisius, the Rebbe Akiva says that they take the, what if a person did averis and he didn't do mitzvahs? So they take him on a ferry and they shuttle him back and forth from the Gehenim Shalesh to the Gehenim Shalshelek. I think there's such parallel midrashim by the Ovdei Avodah also about the shuttling the guy back and forth from the Gehenim Shalesh to the Gehenim Shalshelek.
What's the meaning of that
midrash? It means that people will be punished.
Someone's going to take a ferry from like one house to the next.
Not to be taken literally, but it just means one will be punished for doing avodah, and one will be punished a different type of punishment for not having fulfilled mitzvahs that they were obligated to do. But not legging tefillin is not an avera. It's just the umavatl, a mitzvah. So it's a nachaka, a different kind of gehenim, a different kind of punishment.
Excuse me, Rabbi, we have time for one more question.
Bakasha.
Not for me, from the chevra.
So make it a good question. Okay.
I have two short questions.
One question with two parts. He only allows one question. Okay, one question and two parts.
Historically, when did people stop wearing tefillas?
He got lost in the days of the Gaonim. Gone was before the days of Rashi and Tosfos, after the days of the Amoraim, the Rabbanus Amoraim, so it got lost somewhere there.
Right, and also, if someone has a baguette with tchelos on it, is it okay to go from some days you wear tchelos, some days you don't wear tchelos, or should you really be consistent with it? Go.
We should always try to be consistent, yes. In everything we do, we should always try to be consistent. But why should he be mevatel a mitzvah? Some day yes, some day no. Whenever he wears a four corner garment, you should try to see to it that he should have tchelos. I think so. Okay, learn up a storm. Klal Yisrael needs a lot more Talmidei Chachamim. We need a lot of people to go into the rabbinate and to go into chinuch. And a lot of times people feel that they're not sufficiently knowledgeable. They don't know enough learning to go into the rabbinate. Not necessarily so. Maybe you don't have enough learning to become a member of the Bezin and Yerushalayim. You have enough knowledge to become a rabbi in Louisiana or in Kentucky. If you know how to read Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, you're already way ahead of the game there. We need rabbis in Kentucky, we need chinuch, we don't have, maybe you're not prepared to take over be the head of the kolo in the yeshiva, but you're prepared to teach third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade. We need chinuch on all levels, we need all over the world. We need in Europe, we need in America, we need in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, they need chinuch for Americans also. You feel inadequate, you don't speak Hebrew well, you can't teach Israel. There's so many Americans living in Eretz Yisrael, we need American mechanchim for the American children in Eretz Yisrael. We need learned balabatim also. Even if you're not cut out, a person has to do whatever he's cut out for. If you're not cut out for the rabbanus or chinuch, you should. There are doctors and lawyers who are more learned than the rebbes in the yeshiva. They're just not cut out to be rebbes in the yeshiva. But whatever you do for a living, you should be marbitz Torah. There are people who give the daf yomi shir all over the United States. The overwhelming majority of them are not rabbanim, are not mechanchim. The overwhelming majority are doctors and lawyers and engineers and Indian chiefs. They do other things for a living. They're not musmachim. They're businessmen. They give a shir daf yomi. You give a shir once a week in Menchas Chinuch. Give a shir once a week on Parsha. Give a shir once a week on Mishnah Brura. On Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, whatever. We need more and more talmid chachamim. We need balabatim who are learned, who should appreciate talmid chacham, who should know how to pick the rabbi in the shul. A lot of times, the search committee doesn't know what they're looking for. They don't even know what qualification. They don't know how to judge whether the rabbi knows anything or he's bluffing. We need more learned talmid chachamim. We need more learned balabatim who should be able to be mevinim on the talmid chacham. You have a gvaldig opportunity. Make sure that you get pester your rebbe's more. Don't just listen to the shir. Pester them before the shir and after the shir. Make sure they give you on hashkafen, halachen, gemarin, psak, and everything. They have everything. So squeeze out as much as you can. You have to be selfish. You have to pester the rebbe and get as much as you can. How about slachet?
Thank you very much.
Is
this yours?
That is not mine.
I don't know what it is. Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
Welcome to you. How about Slachet?
Thank you very much.